Hi.
Hello.
How you doing?
Oh my God, what a day.
Oh, okay. Am I supposed to ask how your day was?
That was it. It's just been crazy back and forth all over the place all day. Running, running, running. I just ran back in the door.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing all right. I didn't really run a lot. Kind of sedentary, really. So there's that. And that concludes the exciting story.
I have some tamales. Would you like to run over here for some tamales?
As tempting as that, what, 48-hour straight run is, I'm gonna have to decline.
It's only 360-ish miles.
Yeah. No, thank you. It was a very kind offer. I cooked for myself this evening, so I'm all set.
Well, some folks we know made some tamales and invited us over, and then we ate them, and then they gave us like a dozen to go. Now
Oh,
we're here.
so really you weren't like running around doing last minute emergency errands. You were getting tamales.
I mean, if dinner is an errand, I guess, but no, not really.
Okay. Well, I'm not gonna hold tamales against you.
That would be kind of warm, and honestly, it would be kind of appealing.
Well, you have to peel them because you don't want to eat the corn husk.
Well, I mean, if you're going to hold them against me, I really want masa on my skin, so the corn husk would be helpful.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it's still going to be kind of wet and hot and damp.
Just the way I like
Okay. Speaking of wet and hot and damp, we have to talk about another movie that was selected for this.
Do we want to get do, is this going to be out in time to give one more of an update before the shirts before we get into this?
Oh, sure. So,
Speaking of wet and hot and damp or whatever you just said, we now have a new option for people to buy.
So
So
if
here's you want to start or you want me to start?
I'm just gonna summarize quickly that it was not intentional to add a additional option for this, a fifth option. They were really just gonna be the previous options, and then someone saw that they had sweaters, and then someone
Yeah.
it requested that maybe they could have a sweater, and then they just added it to it, and it's like, well, what do we do? And it's like, well, now we have a sweater to sell, I guess. So there you go. And
there's that.
I would like to point out that the person who lives in a city that has an average temperature in the 80s is really jazzed about having both a hoodie and a sweater.
So great. It's 51 degrees and raining right now, and boy, those sweaters are the best.
That's not how you're gonna get it in February at some point. It's probably already gonna be warming back up again.
Well, it's going to be like 75 in like 3 days, but still, it's I'm th these are I these are the person who makes or the company that makes the sweater is Alternative Apparel. I have two of them, my Tumblr sweater, and I have another one that I wear that's just plain, and then another one, and they're just super comfortable. And I wish I would have known they had them from the beginning because I would have just opted for that instead of the hoodie because I love them. But they put them on, and I got some, and they're going to be great. And I'm looking forward to it.
It's gonna be all bundled up.
I'm gonna have to wear them around the house constantly because they're so comfortable.
All nice and toasty there in Phoenix.
Nice and cool in my office here.
Hypothermia is not gonna be a problem for you.
No, just sweating.
Hence the name, sweater.
Yes, we're getting down to the wire. It's coming Tuesday, 24th. Sales stop. Then they print them and ship them. And exciting. I'm gonna get cool new stuff.
Yes. And as we had mentioned previously, the inspiration, of course, was the Canon Group logo. Played a part, a little bit of a part in influencing the design of it. And so we had felt inspired to pursue a couple of the Canon projects and watch them for the podcast. And Bloodsport was selected last time. And then in our discussion of Bloodsport, we came across the fact that Kickboxer is basically exactly the same sort of thing, and contained almost entirely the same same cast and crew moving over.
Basically the identical premise too, just in a different country.
Yeah, it was so vaguely different somewhere in the middle, but yes, a revenge kickboxing story. This one's not based on a real true story about someone's real true life, sadly, but it is nonetheless a real, I don't know, weird mess of a story where
it's as I described it, it's Bloodsport but bigger, badder, more convoluted, and with more cliches. Like it's they threw every flavor into this soup, and it's not better for it, in my opinion. I think the simpler Bloodsport was a more enjoyable movie. What do you think?
I mean, neither one of these are films that I'm going to race to see again at any point in the future. I do feel that the previous film that we had discussed, Bloodsport, might be less offensive than this film, but there's
that.
Yeah, we didn't touch on it just yet, but we'll get there. There's some stereotyping and weird stuff, and I just don't even know how to describe it. It's
not a movie that modern audiences will appreciate without going, "Whoa, why are you doing that? You shouldn't do that."
Yeah, no, this is a lot of no-nos in this movie.
I mean, especially in contrast to Bloodsport. Like, I mean, we don't need to get into too many specifics, but like, we've again, just like Bloodsport, we've got this sort of like, savage, like city where like full of corrupt people who are, you know, betting on people fighting each other, and they've got this like ultimate killer fighter guy who. You know, in Bloodsport, it was Chong Li, and in Kickboxer, it's Tong Po. So, you know, you've got the short last name there to sound scary and intimidating, and it's basically the same. And it's just like the stereotypes of the bad guys and the countries they go to are enough, and then all of the other stuff on top of it is just so much worse.
Yeah, I mean, because instead of being in Hong Kong, we're in Bangkok, Thailand, and there's a brief introduction that's supposed to be in America, setting up the two brothers, which is something that strains all believability. I'm sorry, not even strains. Believability is broken immediately right off the bat by the fact that they're introduced as brothers. Dennis
explains it later. Remember, the parents got divorced, and the mom took him to live in Belgium, and the dad took the other one to live in Los Angeles.
So Dennis Alexio and Jean-Claude Van Damme are supposed to be brothers, and they
brothers in mullet.
They couldn't interesting frizzy, well greased mullet. they could not be less related and brother like in any like they basically are. Not remotely similar. And there are a couple of other weird moments in this film that come up where when Jean-Claude Van Damme first meets Jian, and Jian immediately recognizes him as an American with a big head, and how, you know, Americans blah 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 blah, and I'm like, there is no way that anyone would look at Jean-Claude Van Damme and listen to Jean-Claude Van Damme and go, "Yes, you are an American, a cocky American." No. It's just, I don't know.
He could have said, "All you white people look the same," and that would have been the least offensive thing in this movie.
It's pretty offensive. There's also some dubbed over voices, as we had seen previously in Bloodsport, and some people playing different ethnicities than they ought to be playing. The main bad guy, Tong Po, is played by Michel Kisi, who's Moroccan. So he's not really Thai so much. And they did the makeup thing and stuff, to try it.
There are times during the movie where it looks like he's wearing a very jokey bald cap, and other times where he looks slightly more natural.
So anyway,
they also did something very strange with his eyes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The makeup, and there's also the character of Freddie Lee, who is dubbed over the entire time by very famous voice actor Jim Cummings. Who I recognized when I was watching the film. It's like, that's Jim Cummings' voice. That's the voice of Darkwing Duck. And sure Wait, enough.
Who was Freddie Lee?
Freddie Lee was the bad guy that Tong Po reported to. And then Freddie Lee reported to the weird guy with the sunglasses by the pool.
Right.
Yeah. I never figured out. I don't remember what his name was.
Oh, Freddie Lee. Wasn't Freddie Lee the big guy with the sunglasses? The big guy by the pool? He was the rich guy who ran the place, I thought. And then the other guys were the underlings.
No. There was the guy that was there walking around the whole entire time, and he ends up kicking at the end right after when he takes out Tong Po.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was Freddie Lee.
Okay. So Freddie Lee is the one who borrowed the $1 million, not the one who lent the $1 million.
I believe so.
Well, they said Freddie Lee sort of like ran the whole city or whatever, and he's the corrupt boss. So I figured the fat rich guy by the pool was Freddie Lee, but I guess who really knows? Maybe Big Tie Man is that one, as he's credited.
I don't know.
Didn't have IMDb photos back in 1989, apparently.
Apparently not.
Darkwing Duck, though.
Yep.
I did not recognize that at all.
It's just a voice stuck out.
I don't know what to say about this movie, where to start. I mean, do you really want to go through everything? So, like, the big-headed Americans, he wins the quote-unquote world championship belt in kickboxing, which I don't think is a thing in America. And then he's talking to the press, getting his photo taken, and they're like, what about Thailand? They invented kickboxing there. They're probably pretty good at it. And he's all like, nah, I can beat them. I don't even know where that country is, but we're going to go there and I'm going to beat them up.
So he's like, that journalist was David Worth making a cameo.
Oh, okay.
Director of the film.
Well, he wasn't very good.
No. Well, wasn't worth it, if you ask me.
Yeah, see, it's good. Eric, his brother, Dennis Alexio, basically just says, like, book us a trip, we'll go. And then I'm going to fight their most fearsome fighter. And then we don't really explain, like, how they found the fighter or how they got there or anything like that. They're just there riding around on boats, taking photos of people, doing stuff. And then they're, like, at a place, and you're like, oh, are they going to go watch the fight? He's like, no, this is the fight. It's just him. They just rolled up in this gym, and they're fighting.
You skipped over the part where he takes the flowers over to the lady at the doorway.
Of course. Yeah. Sure. Because he's a suave American with a mullet, and he goes and gets himself a lady.
But when they get to the kickboxing place, they're chit-chatting, and there's this noise that Van Damme hears, and so he goes down the hallway and he sees Tong Po beating up a support that's probably needed to keep the building from collapsing.
Like a plaster post in his dressing room.
Yeah, and so he sees that and goes, whoa, like Shaggy.
Tong Po makes like a snapping twig hand gesture or something at him.
Yeah, and so then Van Damme goes back to his brother, and it's one of those very forced things where it's written that he can't finish saying what it is that he needs to say, but the pacing of the acting is that no one's really interrupting him as he's technically interrupted according to the script. So it's one of those odd moments. And it occurs several other times in the film where the script is obviously written that he stops talking for one reason or another, but they don't make the connection of something actually interrupting him. So there's always just these little pauses. It just drive me crazy, because it's just like he's just stopped talking to be interrupted by this guy, and he totally could have kept talking. There's nothing natural about it. This is very stilted. But
and you know, they dubbed over basically everybody, well, like some of the people, so they could have just, you know, re-recorded it because they didn't really care about mouths flapping in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, well, the sound quality also in their dressing room was really bad. And not that the rest of the movie is great, but just it was noticeably worse. And so he fake interrupts him, and he's talked down like, "Oh no, don't worry, I'm gonna go beat him up."
Where's the ice? Can't get any ice in this place. Give me some ice. I gotta rub some ice on my neck. That's how I prepare for a fight, apparently.
Ice, ice, ice. Everything's ice with him. Ice, ice, baby.
No, I was gonna make a joke about what happens to him, but no, I'm not gonna do that.
Oh. Okay. So he goes into the ring and they fight. And he gets put on ice.
Yeah, Tong Po, he makes pretty short work of him.
Yeah,
he comes right at him, beats the crap out of him. I mean, he makes it to the second round, but then he knocks him down. Jean-Claude Van Damme throws in the towel. Tong Po is all the more offended by that. He kicks the towel back out and then drops a WWE elbow on his back and right in the spine, which damages the spinal cord.
Yeah, he's not in a good shape. Now, we hadn't mentioned previously, but there is a credit during that opening montage of nonsense of them wandering around Bangkok, and the credit was fight scenes directed and choreographed by Jean-Claude Van Damme. So whenever you see a fight scene, such as this one, it is by your star of the film who is directing these people. Also, Michelle Kesey is actually... childhood friends with Van Damme from Belgium. So they were longtime buddies. And apparently, Michelle also was the trainer that Van Damme used for the film. So they would train with one another for this. So there's a lot of physical work that went into this and zero acting workshops.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't feel that the fighting sequences were really less competent than Bloodsport, so that worked fine, I guess, that they let him be in charge of it.
Yeah, well, supposedly I think he had a role in that in the previous film, but didn't receive a credit for it.
His role was give me something to kick really high and where I can make my legs split really far apart.
Yeah, he does that a lot. He likes to do the splits.
Everything about this movie and his wardrobe and the scenes that they write for him are on the they're geared towards giving him an opportunity to do the splits or put a foot really high or something else flexible crotch related.
Yeah, there's a lot of... They're weird pants, by the way. Just
did
FYI.
You see the pants that I was talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where his pockets are like on the outside, and it's like really tight around the crotch, just because it's like bunched, because he's like it's room for him to move.
Yeah, because basically he wears all of the pants really high up, like way above his waist, and this puts the crotch like way up into his crotch, and then he's got these giant, huge, flared out, pleated legs. That just sort of billow around as he moves. And that's because you need maximum movement, because it just needs to look extra ridiculous. So you have a real tight crotch area and then big billowy pant legs. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, it's like he's emphasizing the legs. He wants you to look at his legs. He wants you to think his legs are long, very long, because his pants are up so high, and he has a very small torso. As a result.
It's got to go somewhere. He's not a tall guy.
It's kind of funny when he gets face to face with Tong Po, and he's just like, "Oh, you're like 7 inches taller than me."
Yeah, face to face, quote unquote. So
face to greasy chest.
Now this is a bit of a setback for them. They have a hospital scene, much like when his buddy gets beat up. In Bloodsport, and they have a hospital scene about the damage that is done to him. Unfortunately,
the best part about this, in parallel to Bloodsport, is like when his friend gets beat up in Bloodsport and people are like holding him back from going after Chong Li. And in this one, people are holding him back and then he gets like kicked in the chest by Tong Po or whatever. And he like falls against just some people in the crowd. And he's like, no, no. He's like reaching up. He's like, the people in the crowd aren't actually even holding your back. You're just like sort of laying there like fake being held back.
Yep. Well,
and then the gangsters up top there on the balcony who are very satisfied that Jean-Claude Van Damme's brother is now toast, do like a little thumb to the side, and then the folks working there with the comical World War II gurney pick him up and just sort of walk him outside and set the gurney on the ground and walk away, and they close the gate. And they're like, well, have fun, American. You're dead now.
Yeah. Oh. And by skipping to the hospital scene, I mentioned the introduction of an essential character to this film.
Absolutely essential.
Well, technically, in terms of the plot, yes. We are introduced to a cab driver. First, there's the sketchy cab driver, and then another cab driver comes along and shoos him away. And this cab driver becomes the buddy all of a sudden. Fast friends. Like, real fast.
Well, he was also the guy in the crowd that he fell on who was like, oh, you give Americans a bad name. Get out of here. I'm not going to take you to the hospital because there's three more fights I'm going to watch because I don't care about your dead brother.
Yeah. And it's Winston Taylor, played by Haskell Anderson. And so...
He's an American who fought in Vietnam and then through a very vague backstory had nothing to go back home to. So he just stayed.
Well, didn't, I mean, he went to Thailand. He didn't, like, stay in Vietnam. But,
well, yeah, he didn't go back to America. He's there and he sells arms and things to the locals.
Yes. But just arms, not legs. But the weird thing is that he's introduced...
Claude Van Damme's got plenty of legs for everybody.
So he's introduced in this really forced way where it's like, hey, buddy, what's up? Like, oh, yeah, we go to the hospital. Oh, you want to fight him? Forget about it. And it's just like, oh, God, can't take it. And chomping on the cigar and stuff. And then you're just like, well, at least this will be over soon. And then he's there for the rest of the film.
Look at me. I'm an American with a cigar and an army hat. Some aviator sunglasses.
So painful. He's got to have a buddy. And he does.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to the hospital, and then for whatever reason, he stays there all night with him, I guess, in the waiting room. They have a passage of time thing where it seems to be many, many, many hours later. And
well, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, this guy who's an American who doesn't know anybody else there, well, quote-unquote American, his brother is in surgery for some spinal-related injury, and you just dropped him off. What are you going to be like, well... He might die, but I'm gonna hit the bar or something. I'll catch you later.
Exactly that. He doesn't know them. You could just go check in with them later.
Well, you know, he's apparently empathetic enough to hang out.
Dan, if you saw somebody get punched in the street outside and you didn't know who they were, and you waited for the hospital to an ambulance to come and take him to the hospital, would you go with him and then stay in the hospital until he was better?
Well, he didn't stay till he was better. He just stayed till he got out of surgery and found out that he wasn't dead.
Okay. Would you stay? Or would you just go home and be like, I'll find out about this later?
Well, I might stay. What else do I got to do? This guy needs some help. He's clearly very distraught.
Okay. Fine. I don't believe you, but the only way to test that is to grievously injure someone and then watch.
Give somebody a spinal cord injury and then drop them off in front of my house and see what I do.
Yeah, it'll be a test of your moral certitude. So
I will order Postmates from somebody who is very near a hospital, and then when the guy gets here, I'll ask him to take the other person.
I don't think that's how that works.
I'll just give him a really big tip in the Postmates app.
No, so anyway, we get introduced to a nurse and a doctor, and they're like, yes, he's paralyzed, and there's nothing we can do about it. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme is like, you're gonna fix him. Something, something, punchy, threatening stuff. And then the cab driver's like, no, man, nothing he could do. It's like, okay. And then they leave. The end.
He's never going to walk again.
Yes. The movie's over.
No, and that's isn't that when Jean-Claude Van Damme pretends to punch the wall out of anger and then just really doesn't hit it very hard?
Yes. And they
I am going to press my hand against the wall.
Yeah, and Jean-Claude Van Damme tries to approach a kickboxing school, a Muay Thai kickboxing school, because he noted that his brother was defeated for not knowing the specifics of Muay Thai and just knowing sort of the European slash American way of kickboxing. And so he figures this is probably important for fighting in an actual tournament that involves completely different rules. I guess his brother didn't really like get a pamphlet or anything on like the fact that boxing is completely different.
Well, all you need is power. Remember when they did that? There was that scene in the park where they trained, and it's you just got to be able to kick really hard.
Yeah, that's definitely that didn't work out. So he goes to the school, and there's all these little kids there, and he talks to the head school guy, and he's like, "Hey, teach me to fight." And then he points at a convenient poster of Tong Po, which seems like a weird thing to keep up for the children to admire. He points to the picture of Tong Po and says, "Hey, I want to do that." And, you know, I just want to
go on that ride.
Yeah.
"You must be this tall to ride this ride," is what the guy says, but we don't understand. And then everybody laughs, and then he leaves.
Those kids,
apparently he's not dedicated enough to stay.
I love when the kids laugh at him, and Jean-Claude Van Damme has to act like a dejected, beaten down person, because he goes full on into "I'm a 9-year old and in a school play," and mm-hmm. he pouts,
like slow dissolves between people who's like hands deep in the pockets, like kicking rocks and stuff.
I know it's pretty sad. And then he meanders just coincidentally in front of the cabbie van with our buddy, and he's like, "Okay, so you really want vengeance? I'll help you with vengeance. I changed my mind arbitrarily for no particular reason. Also, we just happened to bump up into one another for reasons that can't be explained, so it must be fate, whatever." But first he has to go have a drink with him before he'll agree to take him to the boxing master who will teach him how to box and defeat Tong Po. And he's very insistent on this, and Jean-Claude Van Damme's like, "No, there's no time for that. There's only time for vengeance." And he's like, "Nope, drinking." And so they go to some really sketchy, gross place where I was actually kind of taken aback. I was like, "Wait, what? This is I just didn't really realize that they'd be showing so much right now." Because they have,
yeah, I forget all these canon movies are rated R.
Yeah, this is a hard R. It's got some ladies who are wearing things that cover up certain areas, but mostly nothing that covers up anything else. And that's all I'm going to do for describing that. If you have a small child who you're watching this movie with, I don't know what's wrong with you, but it's an R-rated film.
Don't watch R-rated movies from the 80s with small children.
Yeah. But still, it's peculiar. Also, isn't seemingly related or connected to anything. They just wanted to show it, I guess.
You know, because this is Thailand where there are no rules and stuff. And again, this gets back to one of the many offensive stereotypical things about Thailand, where it's just this sort of like wild east of just nonsense and corruption and violence and whatever. And it's just anything goes. And that's why the American is here, the army guy, because he loves partaking in all of his life's pleasures. And he just gets drunk at the strip club every day because that's what he does. And for me, this scene is notable because Jean-Claude Van Damme's like, "No, I don't want any alcohol." And he's like, "Get the guy a Perrier." But then when they like cut back to the table that shows like all of the empty beer bottles that Winston has consumed, there's also like an equal number of Perriers. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme is just like slamming back Perriers. there's like four empty bottles of Perrier, and then he's drinking another one, and he's drunk on fizzy water.
Mm. Well, you do like Perrier, so I'm sure you admired that scene.
I love Perrier, and they were the labels were in a different language, so that was very interesting.
It's almost like they're in another country, Dan.
I know. It's almost like they literally shot this on location in Thailand.
Oh man. CG was great back then. You could just replace part of the Warner's backlot and make it look like Thailand.
Yeah, it's just, you know, they got a really good art department who did their research.
So, anyway, flash forward to him taking him to Xian, and Xian has a place in the middle of nowhere, and he goes there, and Jean-Claude Van Damme walks into a Bugs Bunny trap and gets suspended upside down, and Xian comes out, and they have a little back and forth about how he's not going to train anybody, blah, 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 and he's a, you know, just an egotistical American, and Jean-Claude Van Damme's like, please, I need to take revenge for my brother. Tong Po paralyzed him, blah, 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 blah. This wins over.
He's in the middle of nowhere. He's like, oh, yeah, I heard an American got really badly hurt.
Yeah, and then he apparently didn't know the details, so he says, well, this wins over Xian to help him, and so he chops him down out of the tree or whatever, and then they his first mission is to go get supplies from the store, and so he sends him down to his niece's store, although Jean-Claude Van Damme doesn't know any of this, and he gets there just in time for the insurance payment or whatever it is, the kickback.
So yeah, this is where they couldn't leave the plot alone, and not only is this a revenge plot where the arrogant American's brother gets paralyzed and he needs to avenge him or something, but also there are criminals and like mobsters taking advantage of the honest working locals, taking protection money or whatever, and he feels the need to stand up for the locals, and doesn't let the pushy guys take the money and kicks him in the face and stuff. And in the process, you're like, good Lord, you're kind of ruining the store at the same time. You're like smashing all of her stuff while you're quote unquote protecting her, which I'm thankful that she pointed out. Like, what did you just do to my store? Like fighting these guys? Couldn't you have just like let them take the $20 and leave me alone? That way you wouldn't have broken everything. But he doesn't, because, you know, you got to stand on principle and you can't let these guys push you around. And then, like, there's the old drunk guy sitting outside on the planter box who gives him, like, a thumbs up, like, hey, I'm glad you finally stood up to those big jerks, the big tall guys who don't say anything and just kind of want to fight you and stuff.
Yeah, except, as Miley points out, Miley, the niece, she points out, too, like, she needed to give them the money, otherwise, like, they're just going to come back. Like, Jean-Claude Van Damme's not going to, like, move in and protect the store now. So beating them up once doesn't save her in any small way, and mostly just makes the situation worse for her.
Well, you know, showing the locals that they can stand up for themselves and that they can win is all of the moral encouragement they need for them all to join together as a collective and push back against the mob.
It's a real James Kirk of a story. But unfortunately, that doesn't make any sense. However, there are no real immediate repercussions from this behavior because they just go back to her uncle's, Xian's place, and it's just like, yeah, he beat up people. And it's like, oh, well, good. And then it's like, yay. Okay.
I'm glad like, somebody's finally standing up to these guys. Yeah. Me, the Muay Thai master who lives out here in the boonies, I would never be able to protect my niece, so I'm glad that this dopey American did.
Yeah. I don't know why. Like, if he's... He's theoretically capable of doing all this fancy fighting, and we see his skill and level of control when he does a bunch of like air kicky stuff without hitting Jean-Claude Van Damme.
They didn't even give us like a fake backstory on him. Like, I was waiting for the fact that like, oh, he was a famous trainer, and he actually trained Tong Po, and Tong Po turned evil and started hurting people and killing people and betrayed the ancestral spiritual positivity around fighting and hurting people. So he decided to give up training once and for all. Basically episode
Star Wars?
7. Yeah, basically Luke Skywalker. So Tong Po is, what's his name?
Anakin Skywalker?
No. Tong Po is in the new one.
Oh, well, Dan, I don't know how to tell you this, but that story is also awfully similar to a previous story.
Mm-hmm.
One might say a prequel story,
mm-hmm.
with someone being trained by masters and then being betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound familiar to you at all?
Yeah, but then one of these guys would have to be Obi-Wan, and we don't want that.
Okay.
Because he was boring.
Okay, so Well, I like how you're implying that somehow Jian is like super lively and interesting, but
he is. He's like, I mean, he could be a Yoda or like a Finn, maybe.
Really, Yoda? You think? I doubt that. So they have this exchange, whatever, and he's gonna train him. Blah 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 blah. Insert montage that takes forever. And he's just training for what feels like an eternity. Like, I don't know, what is it, 20 minutes?
Well, you know how it takes a long time is because he has two different types of pants that he wears.
He
makes him put on the training outfit, which is basically like a prison garment.
Yeah. There's this shirt, and then there is either the pants or the shorts. And the pants and the shorts are made out of the same material, etc., except the shorts have been cut in a zigzag and then like fake distressed to make them look like they're torn. But obviously they were cut in a zigzag, like a Charlie Brown zigzag. And so they just keep cutting back and forth between him wearing these two different outfits to show the passage of time as he's learning to train. And then occasionally they'll intercut like some shot of his sweaty brother in the hospital, who's trapped there, and some other stuff. And at one point, there's an eagle that's just watching over them as they're training. It's just strange. But there's
yeah, again, cliches, because they couldn't get enough of them. They have this sort of, like, once he arrives and starts training, they have this, like, eagle that is, like, flying around above them and, like, watching them. And it's, like, the spirit of the fighter that is Jean-Claude, and he's learning things, and he's on this ancient stone city where, you know, all you got to do is listen to the winds and you can hear the fighters, the ancient fighters of decades and eons past and stuff. And then there's, yeah, the eagle keeps coming back.
Yeah. I mean, the location shoot was beautiful, but
yeah, looked nice.
This is just so boring and tedious, because you could shorthand this whole thing as this guy learns how to fight. And then fights, mm-hmm. because there's no specific action that he is taking during this fighting montage where he learns a particular skill that is useful against his opponent.
Well, I'd say there are two skills. He's got the stretchy leg machine.
That's not a skill.
Well,
it's just stamina. That's not a skill.
It helps him learn to stretch.
He's not up against the stretchy leg machine at the end of the film. Like, there's no payoff for the stretchy leg machine.
Well, he does kick. So I would say the one thing that he learns that is useful is to battle through the pain of the kicking of the tree to realize that he does in fact have the strength to break the tree in half with his leg instead of giving up because of the pain.
Yeah, and then he just critically wounded his shin.
instead of eye of the tiger, he's got shin of the, I don't know, elephant or something.
Oh, I thought you were going to say eagle, so you could tie it into the eagle.
Shin of the eagle? I don't think eagles have particularly strong shins.
That's part of the joke, Dan. But
I don't think it's you shouldn't joke about this. It's a very serious fight that he's got to use his legs for.
Yes, this is an incredibly serious movie with the utmost care taken to its depiction of everything, literally everything.
Yeah. I mean, this is like the only real thing sort of about like kickboxing and Muay Thai is the fact that they do kick things that cause like micro fractures in their shin bones, so then it re-heals stronger so that they have the strength to like kick stuff even harder, which sounds horrifying, but that is a thing that happens.
Yeah, but that's not what's depicted here. He just kicks.
No, it's just
he kicks a tree because he gets really
basically just telling him like, don't be a wuss, kick the tree harder.
Yeah. And then there's a black and white montage of things that make him angry. So he kicks a tree harder.
Yeah.
And so, there's no, here's the move you must learn to defeat Tong Po. There's no, here's a fighting style that you must use against him. There's nothing. There's nothing relevant. He just does a bunch of things. And then,
well,
after,
you know, the goal, he said, is to make him fast enough to dodge any other moves so he doesn't get hit and stuff. Although, as we'll talk about shortly, that totally goes out the window because it has to.
Yes. Well, you see, he is only actually any good whenever he's actually thinking about being good, and then the rest of the time he's bad at everything. So he just needs to think about being good whenever the story says, and then not do any of the other stuff, and then he'll be okay. It doesn't make any sense. There's no there's no legitimate leveling up here that occurs. However, eventually, Jean says, okay, so we got one more thing left to do. We're going to go to a special place. And they head to a bar, and this is the bar that you saw that gif of him dancing from, which you had initially assumed was Bloodsport, and we were all excited.
He wears the same clothes.
Yeah, we were all excited to see that in Bloodsport, and then it turned out that he just had the same outfit that he wore in both films, the black spaghetti strap tank top and big poofy khakis, and so He's in this outfit, taken there by Jean, and they start having drinks. They're taking shots of some liquor, and Jean calls it the kiss of death, which is not actually a thing. That's a movie from 1995 starring the guy from CSI, CSI Miami, and they just have the scene of him getting drunk progressively, and Jean-Claude Van Damme is not the best actor to begin with, but asking Jean-Claude Van Damme to act like he's not sober somehow makes him worse in an unexpected way, where he is really consciously thinking about being drunk. he's not. You could see him trying to be to act drunk, and it's just like, this is preposterous. Just give this man some vodka and shoot the scene. Like, I can't watch him stumble around.
They could have told him to act like a toddler, and it probably would have been the same performance.
It was painful to watch. He was so bad. And the middle part of this, of course, Jan provokes an attack from a bunch of Freddy Lee's guys, and they all move in to get in on him when he's dancing by the jukebox with the ladies, and he's got awful dance moves. And he kicks them, beats them, and pushes a table into one of them that knocks them through a railing into the water. So he's demolishing this bar. Bar owner doesn't seem very concerned about this, but we progress with all of the shenanigans.
I remember a skill that he learned in his training. Breathe out when you hit, and then breathe in when you get hit.
Okay.
That's the recipe for success.
That really didn't feature heavily in anything.
Well, it features in the fact that he makes a bunch of like loud noises when he kicks people and stuff.
Oh, well, he's unique in that, I suppose. So one of the moves he makes is he has two guys approaching from the left and the right, and so he jumps up in the air, does an in-air split, which results in a kick of equal force to both of the guys on either side of him, and they fly backwards.
That's a very good move if you're fighting in a bar in Bangkok, or if you're on a cheer squad on a college football team.
Or ballet. It's not a good move that would actually deliver any force. But I'm not an expert. And so they go flying from that. And then there's another one where he sits down at a table, knocks off a bunch of glasses, gets one of the ones that still has booze in it, drinks it, puts it down. Some guy comes up. He hits the guy, smashes his head on the table once. The lightness of his touch is notable in that the guy is immediately acting unconscious. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme realizes that Jean's gone and stumbles out of the bar and goes, Jean, and just like looks around for him, stumbling more and more. And then he eventually gets over to where Jean's talking to some guys, and they are chit-chatting about the fighting, the Tong Po's and stuff. And
it was Freddy and his partner who wears that goofy jacket with the knives in it and stuff. And he's like, look, he beat up all your fighters. Don't you think you should set up a fight with some real fighters? Because you can see what he can do and hook it up, guy. So the whole thing was just sort of like an audition for Freddy and his pal. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme stumbles over and goes like, hey, why'd those guys try to hurt me? He's like, did they hurt you? He's like, no. Why were they mad, though? It's like, boy, you are dense.
Well, that explains why when he has all those water submerging scenes in the training, he doesn't float. Mm. He's so dense. They go back and stuff, and they have a fight or two in an actual ring. And he defeats and dispatches those people. And he does some more training and stuff. And at this point, I believe his brother is out of the hospital. And
don't forget,
and
when he wins the fight, there's the chanting about what, like white warrior or something.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. Let's workshop that one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the direct translation is a bit awkward, but I'm sure it means something better in other languages.
Not sure. As you noted, of course, during these fight scenes, there is, of course, the same cat noise that we had heard previously of Bloodsport.
The cat is still here. Luckily, the fight scenes are shorter and intercut with other stuff that I think there's maybe only like 4 or 5 cat sounds total in this movie, just because the loop doesn't have to run as long each time. But the cat's here.
Yeah, the cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. Thought he was a goner. The cat
came
back
because he just loves watching people get beaten to a bloody pulp in a fighting arena.
Yeah, some unsourced thing that I found online apparently said that the sound that sounds like a cat is apparently somebody doing something with a sitar in a certain way, and that it might be part of the score, which would make sense because Paul Herzog scored both films. The only way to be really, really sure is to listen to a bunch of Paul Herzog films, his scores. But I'm not sure I'm really motivated to do that at the moment, so this might be something we never, ever find the answer to.
It's
unknowable, Dan.
It's a cat. It's a cat. I'm ending it right now.
Okay. Definitely, Paul Herzog just has a key on his little MIDI synthesizer, and it says cat, and he hits that every now and then.
And it goes meow.
Mm-hmm. So.
Meow.
Do I look like a cat to you, boy? You can jump around nimbly bimbly. Anyway.
Meow. So as you pointed out, the brother is out of the hospital. He's in his wheelchair rolling around at Jan's place. And he's like, I don't want you to fight this guy because look what he did to me. And I don't want him to do that to you. Let's get out of here and stuff. And Jean-Claude Van Damme's all like, no, I can beat him because I've been training and I'm better than you and stuff, which is, you know, he should probably go a little easy on his brother because he just, not only did he lose his title and the ability to fight, like he can't walk anymore. So I'll be a little bit more sensitive maybe, but no, he's just like, I'm doing it. Sorry.
Yeah. So in a scene surprising no one, Jean-Claude Van Damme resolves to fight Tong Po. And this starts a weird series of events of threats and things to people and stuff around him.
This is where, again, they couldn't leave the plot alone. It has to be worse and worse and worse. They have to make the stakes so high that he has to win. And he has to win spectacularly. And when he does, everyone will root for him because he is such a good guy against all of these horrible, corrupt, evil, savage bad guys from Thailand.
I think this doesn't make any sense. I think it's really poorly written. I think the directing leaves a lot to be desired, especially in terms of the sensitivity of some of this stuff, some of this material. It doesn't even need to be in there. Like you said, with raising the stakes so high, it's like these stakes were already high.
His brother was paralyzed.
Yeah.
By this fighter guy who clearly could have, like, you know, respected the fight and when he threw in the towel, but no, he actually wanted to break his spine. So that was, you know, enough motivation. That was more motivation than he had in Bloodsport. Bloodsport, he just wanted a samurai sword and a trophy. But in this one, I guess we'll get into some of the horrible bits now before we get into the final fight. So the Freddie Lee's bad guys, they break into Jen's place. They beat up and kidnap his brother, who is, again, paralyzed. They the guy with the funny jacket and the knives throws a knife into Jan's dog,
Kiki,
which thankfully the dog doesn't die. But yeah. Like, good Lord, did we really need to see that? And then,
you did, because they bought that prop where the knife blade is in that little piece of rubber.
It looks like blood.
It doesn't look like blood. It looks like a piece of chewing gum at the end of a sawed off knife. But they got the dog to lie mostly still for that scene. So that's
you
achievement.
Can see the dog looking off camera, just breathing really heavy. Like, can I get up now? Yeah, can I get my snack now?
He's just staring at his trainer. But the dog was a good boy. He did all the acting, or girl, I should say. I mean, you know, Kiki probably a girl, but you know, you never know with Hollywood.
You don't want to be German Shepherd normative or whatever it is.
Yeah. So anyway,
they kidnap the brother because Freddie Lee is going. He borrowed $1 million from. I don't know why they're using American money denominations.
Well, I don't know why he had that scene where he talked to the other bad guy from Thailand, and they're both speaking English in broken dubbed English. But they
the
fat did.
The guy laying by the pool who has all the money, they both speak in English because English is the language of business, by the way, Joseph. So that's why they were probably speaking in English.
Yeah.
He borrows $1 million to put on Tong Po because he knows Tong Po's going to win. Also because they kidnapped Jean-Claude Van Damme's brother, and they're going to be like, if you don't lose, he's going to die. And then to add further insult to injury, in a horrifying scene, they kidnap his lady friend. What's her name?
Miley.
Yeah, they kidnap her and take her to Tong Po, and she and Tong Po rapes her.
It's not depicted on screen, but it is definitely what the intention of how they shot it, because she's taken into his place. They shut the door. Two guys are holding her. Tong Po does a weird, gross lip licking thing and then rips off part of her shirt to upper dress area thing off camera. And then it cuts away. And then you see her crying, holding her shirt and talking to Jian the next day. And she doesn't talk to Jean-Claude Van Damme about any of this. But it does come up in the final fight.
And yes, it's unnecessary. It's horrifying. But to a certain extent, I can let that go as like Tong Po, or again, that they've like over vilified all of these people. But the part that makes this so much, so, so much worse is like Jean-Claude Van Damme finds out his brother was kidnapped because they see like the wheelchair turned over and the dog or whatever. But then they're like driving to the fight, and Miley's like, you can't tell him about his brother or whatever. You know, and also like Tong Po raped me and I'm not going to tell him because he needs to be focused on the fight. It's like, whoa. Like you are going to like his fight against this guy is more important than that. No. You should not be doing that at all.
Yeah, it's just messed up.
I don't want to burden him with the fact that I was sexually assaulted by this guy. So I'm just going to keep my mouth shut so he can go have a good kickboxing fight to get revenge for his stupid, arrogant brother. Oh, my God. When I saw that part, I was just like, who wrote this? They should be punished thoroughly for that.
Glenn A. Bruce.
Well, Glenn, that was bad. Don't do that.
Yes. Well, considering his name has no link on Wikipedia, I'm going to assume that he didn't do it again. this might be a weird time to mention this, but Chuck Norris apparently was trying to buy the rights to do this film from Golan, who was the Canon producer guy who owned the rights and wanted Van Damme to be in it. And he said no, and he said Van Damme would be in it. So just keep in mind, this could have easily been Chuck Norris, and exactly the same plot points would be occurring. And it'd be equally gross and disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently a lot of people think that it's totally cool to use this as a plot point, and I think that is not cool. And that it doesn't really mean anything in terms of the story, and there's a lot of stuff where it's just like, let's do a bunch of bad things, and they do. And it doesn't really raise the stakes in any significant way for the final battle, because they still needed to fight anyways. They weren't going to not do that. And of course, they get off to a bad start. He's supposed to lose the fight, according to Freddy, but make it really close so that he can go down in a way that earns him the money that he places a bet. Otherwise,
he's gonna make it all the way to the end of the fight. He's gotta last all the rounds, but he's gotta lose also. Or the kidnapped brother is going to be killed slowly and painfully.
Yeah. And so he agrees he doesn't really agree to this. He just goes to start fighting. And things are not going well. Meanwhile, Jian's gone to try to rescue the brother. He somehow figured out that he'd be in a certain warehouse that's nearby.
He's in the barn behind where they're fighting.
Yeah.
And there's like four guys guarding him. They have, you know, guns and stuff, but They're inept. They're goons.
Yeah, they are comically inept. So this old man beats him up. But
the fight starts and Jean is gone. His brother is not there. Miley is just sort of sitting there all bashful. And then he's like, I don't have anybody in my corner. What am I doing? I gotta fight this guy and lose, or they're gonna kill my brother. And he's just getting beat up. And not to mention, don't forget they're fighting, quote unquote, the ancient way, where they put nylon dipped in honey or something with broken glass on their gloves. So when they hit each other, it supposedly would cut them deeply because that's what glass does. But it just sort of like leaves scratches and sort of like splashes red goop on their face.
Yeah, ancient nylon. from the prehistoric
times. I think
she
said hemp or something.
They have him go and fight and stuff, but he gets to a point where he's not going to be able to defeat the goons, and in comes this shadowy figure, and the shadowy figure shoots up a bunch of people, launches some grenades, destroys the inside of this barn, and without taking down the whole thing, movie magic, and dispatches all the peeps, and lo and behold, it is their cab driver friend who was from the Vietnam War, and he's lost a lot of people. He's not going to lose anymore. And so anyway, he's there. He rescued him. He says, now we're even. And then Jen takes a hook and somehow pushes it in a way that it lands underneath the crotch of the knife throwing guy and drags him off into a place, and then he's hurting and stuff and going, ow, ow. And
it's a barn / warehouse. They got pulleys and ropes and large hooks for things. So he pushes it over and hooks him in the butt.
Yeah. And he says, that was for Kiki. It's like, okay, sure.
And of course they brought Kiki to the fight, just sitting there like a good boy.
Yeah, well, they had originally taken her into the city to go to the hospital, so she got all patched up before the fight. She's feeling great. And so they...
I feel great. La-di-da. There was a knife in my hip yesterday.
And so they go out to... They go back to the fighting rink, and they've got the brother. All of them are there, and Miley, and the dog. So there's no one that they can threaten, except... if they were to actually shoot them inside of the arena right now. But
well, when he comes in, they like hold him up in the air and he whistles real loud, which is the thing he did before.
Yeah.
To get Jean-Claude Van Damme's attention and be like, hey, I'm here. And you can fight now.
And then he starts to cheer for his brother because this crowd is easily malleable.
He starts doing the white warrior chant again.
Yeah. Wish they didn't. And so they fight. And now Jean-Claude Van Damme realizes that he, can fight, I guess. So he beats him up.
No holds barred at this point because he doesn't have to worry about throwing the fight. So, suddenly he can unleash the fury of all of his, eagle inspired training.
Yeah.
And defeat Tong Po.
Yeah. And he gets the nylon / hemp. Ancient nylon / hemp.
Take it off. I don't even need it. I don't even need the glass gloves anymore.
No. Nope.
And then Tong Po's like, fine, I'm going to get a stick with some fire on it. I'm going to come at you with that. And he's like, nope, can't even defeat me with that. I'm going to beat you up again. I'm going to kick you in the face and stuff.
Yeah, and then there's like no one calling this because they go outside of the rink, and then he pushes him up against a column, support, something, beats him up, kicks him a bunch, and then Freddie Lee's there, and then he... kicks him too, and so people have been kicked, and that's it.
And the
he
guy
wins.
Wants to ring the bell, but Winston's like, "Nah, you ain't ringing the bell. They're gonna fight until he knocks him out."
The end.
Yeah, he literally sits. He wins the fight, sits down on the bench, and the camera pulls back, and then it freeze frames, and then we're out. But like, I was expecting Jen to be like, "Hey, I put a bunch of money on you to win, and we won a whole bunch of money because those dinguses put $1 million down on Tong Po, and he lost." But no, that never comes back.
No. Well, I'm sure that probably came up in the sequel that Jean-Claude Van Damme didn't want to be in.
Look at all it's fade in. Look at all this money we won from when Jean-Claude Van Damme killed Tong Po. Boy, it sure is sad that he went back to America and we've got to find somebody else to help us fight and stuff.
Well, apparently in the sequels, it's his brother.
The paralyzed one?
No, different brother they didn't talk about. David Sloan.
Oh, of course.
Who was not previously Sloans. Mentioned.
David Sloan of the Sloan family.
Yes.
Those Sloans, they have a history of learning to fight. You know, again, because the dad raised the one in Los Angeles and the other one raised the mom raised the other one in Belgium. But they learned how to fight.
Yeah.
And be strong. Jean-Claude, he got in some good shape for this one.
Yeah.
He was very ripply.
Yeah, no, he meets all of the physical challenges that he sets for himself since he's directing himself. That's fine. But yeah, he's still not a good actor.
Yeah, but he's got a loincloth and very large thighs.
Yeah. Oh, do you know who plays David Sloan?
No, who?
Did you ever see the show Step by Step?
No.
Okay, well, one of the older son was played by Sasha Mitchell, and so that's the guy who plays David Sloan in the sequel. So, and then they've got the reboot coming, which you had mentioned to me previously, and I was like, oh, not excited. But that's Kickboxer Vengeance, and now Van Damme is back as the master teaching someone. So
yeah, he's going to be in the Jian role. Yeah. He's going to get somebody drunk and make them punch some people in the crotch.
Yeah, one can only hope he dances. And by that, I mean, I hope that it doesn't happen. But that's where we're at.
Kickboxer. Much more convoluted plot for no reason. Far more offensive stereotypes, dialogue, scenarios, and acting. And Jean-Claude Van Damme does basically the same sort of fighting stuff.
Yep.
It was a more dramatic, I don't know, I don't even know if it was a more dramatic setting, because not only did they fight the ancient way with their glass gloves and stuff, but they had it in that underground thing where the ropes were made out of chains, and there's like, you know, torches lighting the room and stuff, but that cool place where they did the blood sport thing with the bendy floor was pretty rad.
Yeah. I will say this, though. I feel like maybe the editor for this wasn't on Valium, whereas I feel like maybe the Bloodsport editor was. So things feel just a hair more tightly edited than the previous film. Not
well,
tight.
Well, you got to get all four of those plots in there, so you just got to cut it up more.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not saying this is tightly edited. I'm just saying tighter than Bloodsport. It would be one positive thing that I could say. The music is equally ridiculous between the two of them. You could swap the scores and it would sound probably the same,
yeah,
including
the thing
songs.
About this movie. It's full of like late 80s era terrible pop music, kind of like full of nonsense inspiring lyrics or whatever. Fight to survive or whatever the hell they're singing. But it's
yeah.
they could have put an act like a regular score in this movie and it would have been so much better. It would have been way less jokey.
Well, do you know why the songs all kind of sound all poppy, weird, and stuff? It's Stan Bush.
Same guy.
And also, the other thing that he's probably famous for that a lot of people would remember would be The Touch from Transformers the movie, the cartoon movie. You got the touch, dun, 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 you got the power. Remember that?
I did see that as a Google result when I was searching for it. I don't think I remember that from my
yeah,
childhood.
Yeah, well, it's a thing. It's so bad it's good is what I'm telling you. He did these other songs that are here. So they're there. They're available.
Yeah. I don't like this movie as much.
I could tell.
We were going to be all like, let's do canon. Let's do a series of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies like we did with Stallone and stuff. And now I'm just like, oh boy, I don't want to. If this is where this is the direction they're going, like somebody should have been saying no a lot more than they did when they were making these movies.
Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't want to like be mean or anything, but I was going to suggest after this that maybe we don't do any more of these Jean-Claude Van Damme canon Pictures Films.
I think I'm on board with that.
Yeah. Like, sorry, Cyborg. Sorry, other nonsense. I'm not really that into it.
No.
Mm-mm.
We'll find something else to talk about.
Yeah. Plenty of other muscles in Brussels.
Are there, though?
I don't know. I'm just assuming.
I don't have anything else to say about this movie. It's just... Oy, it was a bad version of Bloodsport with more money. I mean, it's not even like they really had that much more money according to the estimated budget. They just they did a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
With more stupid characters.
The dollar went a little further because they weren't shooting most of this in a city.
I guess. I still prefer what's his name? Donald Gibb as the sidekick from Bloodsport than any of the sidekicks in this one.
Yeah. I think the supporting cast didn't support so much, so it fell a little flat.
Although Jian was good. Like that opening scene where he gets caught in the Bugs Bunny trap, they had some fun banter, and it was kind of silly, but then you're like, wait a minute, why is there funny banter? Your brother got paralyzed like 2 days ago.
Eh.
Mm. Anyway.
Yeah. The end.
Kickboxer.
Box kicked.
Tree kicked.
Yep. Gotta get angry enough to kick that tree.
Yeah, don't be a wuss. Just kick the tree harder.
Mm-hmm. Just keep kicking it.
What's the matter with you? What are you doing tonight? I don't know. Just kicking it.
Oh, so damn Dan, but I love it.
Thank you.
Yes. Sometimes it seems so hopeless, all alone. Nowhere to turn. It's up to me, I won't be denied. It's better to lose than never have tried to fight for love with all my heart. Fight for love the night is Jean-Claude Camille Francois van Varenberg.
Kickboxer.
JCCFVV. It's a long name. Oh, wow, he's only 56?
Oh, man.
He looks...
Looks like he spent a little bit too much time partying in Thailand.
Yeah. One night in Bangkok... And
the world's right.